Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Paranormal Hour. I am your host, Willow Cross, with my co-host, J.H. Glaze. Tonight, we have a great show in store for you. We've got Mark Hampton and Brandon Tilley from Extreme Arkansas Paranormal. They are ghost hunters, and I get to go with them December 14th on a ghost hunt. We also have demonologist and new author, Michael Barbie. He will be coming in later on in the hour and discussing some of his escapades and some of the things he's been into. We'd like to welcome you to the World of Ink Network and Blog Talk Radio. We have a multitude of shows that you can listen to. We've got something for just about everybody. There's the Book Discussion with Fran Lewis, the Writing Mama Show with Virginia Grenier, The Edge with Cassandra Dane, Right Stuff with R.J. Jeffries, and A Good Story is a Good Story with Marcia Casper Cook. And Jeff, J.H., how goes it, mister?
Hey, what's up? Hey, you know what? Speaking of ghost hunters and things like that, I've downloaded an application for my iPhone. It's supposed to be a ghost locator, right?
Uh-huh.
I don't think it's real.
Oh, no. Why?
Well, you know, it shows faces, but I don't really believe that the faces are really anything. And it also says words occasionally, like help and stuff like that, but I don't think it's, I think it's just
a random thing.
Yeah. I was
well,
pretty bummed out, actually, because I walked all around my house for an hour and a half.
Dude, I want to get my hands on a ghost box. If I could get one of those things, I would probably spend most of my time chatting with the dead folks.
And you're talking about one of the ones that flips through the radio stations and stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've seen some serious videos about those that it seems real. You know, I saw one that was a guy that sat outside of a serial killer's house where the guy lived, and it was some serious stuff that they were getting off of that thing sitting out in the street outside the guy's house.
Oh wow!
But yeah, I'm guessing if you ever check out Ghost Lotto on, I can't remember the name of YouTube, Ghost Lotto on YouTube. They've got some pretty good videos on there. And I wonder our guests tonight have some crazy stuff like that to talk about.
That sounds pretty awesome.
So,
can you hear me okay?
I can right now.
Okay, good. Well, speaking of Ghost Box, let's bring on our guests, Mark Hampton and Brandon Tilley.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
How are
you
all there?
Much. We're excited to have you on the show tonight.
First of all, I want to state, please don't trust any app from your app store. I mean, we have professional equipment that detects, electromagnetic fields, and any app that you get from an app store is strictly for entertainment purposes only. I will say that right off the bat.
I was afraid of that. You know, it wasn't even worth the free download, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, yeah. Even if you pay for it, I mean, it's not, you know, your phone's just not the type of technology you need to pick up that kind of information. It does have magnets in it, but I guarantee you, it's going to lead you wrong. It really will. It's good fun.
Let's talk a little bit, guys, about first of all, the ghost hunt that you guys have so graciously invited Michael and I to go on, tell us a little bit about what we're going to experience.
You want to take this, Brandon?
Well, to start off, that was one of my very first ghost hunts that I've ever been on. It holds a special place in my heart. To be honest, it's one of the greatest places we've been to. I've had several encounters there that I've named just about every one. You know, we've had the choker, the perv, we've had the follower. The very first experience that I went on there, you know, the very third floor that we went on, there's a little prison block, and experienced the choking there, and that was by me. They had, you know, went in there, and one of the ghost hunters was speaking to the ghost, and all of a sudden, I'd experienced the breath being taken out of me, and there was no way I could get it back. Now, I'm not asthmatic or anything like that, so I really did, it was a sensation of being choked. Everyone's kind of come away with different feelings from there. You'll experience all kinds of sensations, in all honesty. There will be fear at one point. There will be happiness and joy of what you're seeing. I mean, it is a great place to find what you're looking for, especially spiritually. Ghost-wise, you're definitely going to find something at the asylum.
And you, one thing you got to remember is not many of these people, you know, 80% of the time that these people went in there, this was back in the 60s when TB, there was no cure. So 80% of these people that went through there, they knew they were going to pass away. So they already had peace with it. And a lot of these spirits are intelligent. They will sit there and they will talk with you. And, you know, there's many investigators that go in here, some good, some bad. You know, each time we go in with a different thought because the investigators before us may bring in something like a Ouija board or something that may open up something that's not supposed to be there. And we got to take that into consideration each time we go in there.
Right.
But the majority of the time, it's intelligent spirits that are there. There's a woman in the basement named Bethany. We've had intelligent conversations with her, and we've come to find out that she pretty much was there with her husband, and she pretty much died at the same time, or not at the same time, but a little bit after him, and she followed his body outside while they were wheeling him down, you know, to go ahead and get ready for, you know, the funeral or whatever, and I haven't been able to get in contact with her husband or even know his name, but we do have EVPs where, you know, it does, you know, state that that is Bethany, and even intelligent as far as ask, you know, we appreciate you talking with us, and she will say, you know, anytime, you know, very intelligent spirits, very intelligent, you know, but we always take caution when we go in there because you never know what's going to be in there when you go.
So basically that place was more, it was referred to as a sanitarium then, right? Not an asylum, right?
No, it's not an asylum. No, it's more of a sanitarium.
Yeah. Now, there was a prison area, though. There was on the third floor on, I believe, the left end, there is a prison area. And you know, that's where, you know, I of course, received the choking. And we've had a little bit angrier answers in those, you know, from some of the EVPs that we've received.
Yeah,
but the rest of it was strictly a sanitarium.
So then basically if somebody was convicted of murder or something and they chose an insanity plea, that's where they ended up then, right?
That is correct.
It was almost more like, okay, you know, if you're in prison back in them days and you committed a heinous crime, that's where they would take prisoners to get treated, you know, in that sanatorium. But what we're going to be doing this time, you know, and, you know, I have been out of the game for a while, you know, which is, you know, something that, you know, I would like to talk about that in a later time. But it's one of the things to where I went to, the first investigation I went on was in Smackover, Arkansas. And I ended up bringing something home with me. And it pretty much terrorized everybody that we were around, you know.
we hear that a lot. We've heard a lot of stories about first time investigations and people bringing stuff home with them.
Yeah.
And
so I had to get out of
that. So tell us about that. Tell us about the experience of you know, I mean, it must have been like a holy crap moment for you to realize that something did follow you home and now you had to deal with it.
Well, it's one of those things to where, you know, one minute you're in your home and you're starting a hobby to want to do this. You buy all the equipment, you know, you're wanting to do the hobby. You get all the equipment you need to do, and you're going on your first investigation. And before you leave, your home is peaceful. You know, you go to sleep at night. You don't think of anything, you know. And you go to this place, and there was an old prison where they used to keep prisoners. It was an old prison where you would go down up under this building and down some stairs. And we got an EVP, the clearest EVP we had, of somebody basically warning one of the females that was there, you know, telling her, you know, you're going to die down here. And we got out of there fast, and we come to find out his name was Hank. And Hank kind of followed us and tormented my family a little bit, and I had to get out. I had to get out for a little while, but, you know, like I said, now I'm back, and I'm wanting to go big with it. You know, that's the reason I invited Willow Cross, and I'm wanting to go back after it. And I couldn't think of a better place to do it besides this place here.
So how'd you get rid of Hank?
I didn't.
Hank's still around then.
I had to cope with it. It's something you have to cope with. I, you know, like I said, I'm just an investigator. I don't know proper techniques in order to get something out of my home.
Uh-huh.
But as far as I know, he never left. So.
Well, when we get together, we'll have a little chat because I can help you with that.
Okay.
You have to remember, when you're dealing with spirits, not diabolical entities, but spirits, they are no different dead than alive. You still have to throw them out, sometimes gently and sometimes with excessive force. But it can be done.
The funny thing about that is Mark mentioned earlier that he had called me the reverend of the group. I've always, every time we've gone to any of the investigations, I've always brought a bottle of anointed oil with me, and I've always covered my car in it, and I've always prayed over the car before we, you know, leave or before we go in, just to kind of make sure nothing ever follows, you know, at least me on
place
you didn't go. But I have had one experience where I had, you know, a spirit call my name when I got home, but after that it left me alone and been pretty blessed since.
So have you tried Pat Benatar music? I mean,
that
stuff is like bad enough to chase anything out of anywhere.
Well, you know the bright side of this is Hank is now with my ex-wife because I'm divorced.
Sweet.
And he's here and I'm gone.
Damn, you know, I should have thought of that whenever I got my divorce.
Oh, that is serious Kirby payback, dude.
Wow.
No, I'll think about so many tanks. Okay, so I want to hear about, you guys have been doing this for a while now, right? I mean, from what I've seen, this is not a new thing for the two of you've been.
No, it's not new. It's something that, you know, and you know, I almost got bored with it because once you know that there's things out there, once you know that there's someone out there besides a living being, you're almost like, okay, yeah, I got an EVP, whoopee. Yeah, I got a few pictures.
What do
you do? But I want one on video. That is my goal. I want something on video. I want some, I mean, that is my ultimate goal.
I can understand what he's saying on that because when we went in, pretty much everything we had has been funded by Mark, not a sponsored group or anything like that. Any equipment that we have, you know, has been purely out of Mark's pocket. And one thing going into, you know, once we first got the first EVPs and got the first photos and everything, we were ecstatic. I mean, we were so excited to get all that. But then we wanted more, and we still do want more. I mean, we would love to catch something on video. We would love to get something high-end that just show everybody what we experience when we go there.
Well, dude, I got a name for your television show when you start it. It's unique from anything else I've heard of, okay? You can call yourself Ghost Junkies.
You know what?
Sounds like you need it bad.
I know. It's almost like crack. You got to have it once you get one.
Well, the thing is, you want everybody to experience what you've experienced. You want everybody to see it's just not blowing smoke and, you know, the mist and the mirrors. You really want them to experience what you experience when you go there. You know, when you tell people what you've been through, you know, you've been choked, you've heard an old man talk dirty on EVP, you know, you've felt things, you've seen things. You don't want them to look at you like you're just, you know, 10 times crazy. You really want them to experience and show them what you went through, you know, to kind of get to that point.
No, go ahead, Bella.
That's one of the reasons why I am so excited to get to come, because I deal with ghosts all the time. But I have no proof unless there's somebody here to hear the door open or watch the door slam for no reason. I can't ever prove that it's for real. And I get, you know, I'm used to people thinking I'm a flake or a Looney Tune. I'm used to that. But it would be nice to have something, some
to prove you
incredible
are.
Evidence. I am a little crazy. I'll admit that.
I think we're all a little crazy at this point.
Yeah, well, if you're looking for crazy proof, I mean, I'll back you up.
I'm looking for hard evidence to prove I am not a lunatic, because I will admit to crazy. I'm good at crazy, but I'm not a lunatic, and I want proof to show the world, look, here you go. Check this out. This is totally happening. I'm not a complete total flake.
Well, so, I will tell you this. Danny, I got to give credit to a guy named Danny. He came around, you know, a little after Brandon did. He's another investigator of ours. He's our spokesman. I mean, this guy's a salesman for a pharmaceutical company. He knows how to get us. I mean, we went to Fort Chaffee. We wasn't supposed to go to the prison part of it, but he pretty much sold us into it. And he's been a big part of the thing. He's bought a lot of equipment, and he has actually invested a lot of money into it as well, and he has actually purchased a laser grid, a large laser grid that will cover a large-scale area that we are very excited to use in that. We're going to be able to set up a camera with a laser grid, and that's covering all bases.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was done.
what kind of equipment? Can you name off a list of what kind of equipment that will be used with the laser grid and, you know, everything else that
We have a few night vision cameras. We have a game camera that will pretty much, you know, everybody knows how a game camera works. We have a EMF detector. You know, we have pretty much the basic equipment we have, you know, but as far as the thermal imaging and stuff like that, we would love to be able to have something like that, but, you know, like Brandon said, you know, we are a low-budget paranormal group, you know, and those things are pretty much the price of a car these days.
Hey, have you ever heard of GoFundMe?
No, I haven't.
GoFundMe, and there's several different websites like it, but what it is, it's when you need money for something just like that, where you post the information of what you need it for, what you're going to use it for. If you have a video camera, you shoot a quick video talking about it, and you put it up, and you ask people to basically put money into it to help you get it going.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. There's Kickstarters, Indiegogo, all kinds of cool things where you can raise money to buy that extra equipment. And, guys, in case you didn't know this, and you probably do, if you happen to have an iPhone, there's a thermal app. It's a thermal cam app you can download that will allow you to use your phone as a thermal cam.
Well,
is it one of the apps that you talked about earlier, was it?
Yeah, I was just going to say, man, did you hear him say don't trust the phone app?
It's not for ghosts. It's just simply a thermal cam. They did this app to help people if you smell something and you think your house is on fire. That's what the whole point of the app was, that you can use this thermal app and you can check and see if you've got hot spots in your walls to see if maybe your inside wiring is on fire. But
now, what's it called again?
Pardon me?
What's it called again?
It's just a thermal cam app for iPhone.
Oh, okay. So you don't get it through Android?
I'm sorry,
Android?
I didn't mean to talk over you.
No, I'm talking over you. I apologize. You're the host.
Hey, guys, if we just allow 1 second, count to two before you start talking after each time you stop, that gives another person a chance to step in if there's a delay on their phone. Because, like myself, I have a VoIP phone, which runs through my internet, and sometimes there's a 1 or 2 second delay in whenever I'm talking and when I can hear. So if everybody leaves just a second or two gap in between when they're talking, nobody will step on the subject.
Great idea. Okay, what were you saying, Mark?
I was asking if that does it run through Android as well, or is it just iPhone?
Oh, I bet there is. I bet if you look it up, there is, because the whole point of that app was it was created to help with house fires. They had nothing to do with ghosts. They just created it so that if you smelled smoke but you couldn't find a source of it or smelled something hot, you could download this app and you could look at your walls and look for hot spots. But incidentally, it works well for ghost hunting as well. So I heard. I've not used it. I don't have an iPhone. I'm the last person in this particular continent that does not own a cell phone. I'm fighting a man. I'm not going to have a cell phone. But
fighting a man.
I'm fighting
a man.
You're
really holding out on that.
I refuse to conform. I refuse to conform. Conforming is defeat.
Well, now I feel like I'm just part of the system now.
Look out, Big Brother's coming. No, I'm playing.
The Soylent, Green is human.
Okay, I have another question for you. Whenever you mentioned your friend who's a pharmaceutical representative, who has the equipment, everybody has a day job. I have a day job. I'm a writer. I have a day job. So my question is, if you guys have day jobs, do you, like, go to work and talk about this stuff?
Not really. You know, it's one of those things that there's people that will pretty much think you're a lunatic. You know, I'm sure everybody goes through that. Everybody that does this goes through that.
Yeah, I think I think if you went to work and you say, hey, man, I saw a bunch of ghosts last night. I was hanging out with this pharmaceutical representative. They might think you've been sampling the product.
Go ahead.
I always like to have people just kind of find it out on their own. They ask what I did, you know. I always say, well, I did investigations this weekend. If they're kind of interested, then, you know, I kind of explain a little further to them. But right off the bat, I just don't say, you know, hey, I went ghost hunting, you know.
You know what you should do? What you should do is you should say, hey, dude, let's go out for a burger. And and instead of going to McDonald's, you take them to the sanitarium.
Yeah.
That'll freak them out.
I've got a burger that'll blow your mind.
show you something.
Once people know. Sorry, guys. I think once people know what you do, that that truly affects how they look at you, not just in that they think you're a little bit crazy, but case in point, Saturday, I moved this week, so it's been kind of crazy, but I believe it was last Saturday, I got a phone call just out of the blue in the afternoon from somebody that I know and said, look, there's some weird stuff going on in my house and I need some help. And I spent about an hour talking her through what to do, how to do a house cleansing, and how to get rid of this entity that's in her house. And I got up, I hung up the phone, and I just started laughing because, believe it or not, that's a pretty typical Saturday for me. Once people know, you know, who I am and what I do, that the calls start coming or Facebook messages or emails or whatever, hey, I've got this problem, can you help me? And I'm not an expert by any means. Let me put that disclaimer out right now. I'm not an expert. I've just dealt with a lot of them, so I have some experience in it. But do you find that that happens with you? If you mention something about ghost hunting, do people come to you and say, look, I think I got a ghost. Can you help me get it out of my house?
You know, that has kind of same story just about pretty much. It happens to me when people find out, especially, you know, my ex-wife, she was living in some apartments at one time, and she found out through her mom that I was doing this, you know, ghost hunting, and she had happened to mention it. You know, she said, you're crazy for doing that. You know that? I said, yeah, but it's really, you got to be there. It's great. You know, there's nothing like it. And it wasn't even a week later, you know, she was telling me a story and said, you know, my youngest one, I think she's talking to ghosts at night because she keeps staring at the ceiling and just talking. I think it's my grandma, but I'm not 100% sure. And, you know, what do you recommend? And I was like, well, I recommend, you know, of course I'm the anointed oil man. And so I said, I recommend, you know, we can either do an EVP or I can come in and anoint the place. And that's pretty much the best I can do for you. And she chose, you know, the anointed oil. And, you know, every now and then, you know, we get questions. And, you know, of course people kind of want to ride along, but, you know, try to protect the group just a tad bit and not bring everybody that wants to jump along with us. But, you know, a lot of people, when they do find out, they're very interested to know more. And what our experiences was, the little details that had happened that maybe we didn't post on Facebook or maybe we didn't post on our page, they're interested to find out more about what's going on with us.
Yeah.
So I've got, you remember me telling you guys about how we're going to have someone in the nursing field that's going to be there. Now, we all know that when you bring a new person into a haunted location, it's a lot more active. This person is going to be dressed in full nurse's attire. And, you know, as we pretty much know back in the day, you know, they did a lot of experimental drugs on things, so there might be a lot of animosity when it comes to these spirits and when it comes to, you know, the whole, you know, thought of someone pretty much experimenting on them. I've actually got her with me right now. Her name is Holly, and she's with us, and if you want to ask her any questions on her feelings on this, I mean, she's going to pretty much be feeling the brunt of a lot of stuff that goes on there.
Is Holly on the line right now?
She's here right now.
Oh, Holly, hello.
Hello.
Great to have you. Are you scared at all?
It's going to be my first time ever going.
And you're going dressed like a nurse.
Yeah, I'm a nurse, so yeah, I'm gonna dress in nursing clothes, and yeah, I'm a little nervous.
Okay.
Hello, did you tell her about Andrea Perron?
Oh yeah, you guys. I wish you could have heard that show. We had Andrea Perron. She wrote the book House of Darkness, House of Light, which is a book that The Conjuring is based off of. Talk about freak you out stuff. That was some seriously freaky stuff. Holly,
you need to make sure that they anoint you before you go in. Just if you're brand new to this, and I tell people this every time we have a show, I talk about this. You have to make sure you protect yourself before you go in and when you come out.
Absolutely.
It's very, very important because you don't want hitchhikers. They're very hard to get rid of. Not to scare you even more, sweetheart, but... But since you've got the reverend there, you need to make sure that you get anointed and protected before you go in, and then again before you come out. I think that this will be an amazing experience, and I think with all of us together, and Michael too, that we are going to be getting all kinds of stuff. I think we'll be getting evidence like crazy. I'm super excited about this.
Yeah, hey, make sure that everybody has a camera, because whenever the movie comes out of the actual footage, the lost actual footage where everybody disappeared, I want to make sure I see it from all angles.
Yay! Well, you know, if that really does happen, at least I know my book sales will soar. So,
well, at least for a week.
I'm dead, but I'll be rich.
Hey, you know what? All right, Haunted, the Willows Experience. Based on the video.
Just so you know, just for the listeners out there, Haunted Fives is going to be all about what happens in that sanitarium. The whole thing is going to be about that. So there better be a lot of stuff happening, or that's going to be a very tiny book.
Yeah, it'd be like, here we sit, it's 9:30, and nothing's happening. Here we sit, it's 10:55, and nothing's happening.
That's exactly what happened on my last ghost investigation. I went on one this summer, and we were up until like 6 o'clock in the morning, and it was ridiculous because I had a couple of youngsters with me, a couple of teenagers were there helping my son and one of his friends, and every little bump and bang, they'd be like, "Did you hear that?" It was like Ghost Adventures on crack. Did you hear that? I'm like, yeah, the air just kicked on. Go ahead.
You do know this is how Ghost Adventures got started, a biography. You never know. Me and Brandon might be the next ones.
That's right. Let's bring on our demonologist, Michael Barbie, who's also a new author. He's got a new book that's going to be coming out in a couple of months. It's a book of shadows. He's an occult specialist and a practitioner as well. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What do you have to say about all this? We've been talking about hitchhikers and protecting yourself ahead of time. What's your advice?
It's good advice. I mean, a lot of the possessions I deal with started in this manner, and they followed the person home and basically like a virus infected a family member and just went down, healed from there.
Now, you're talking possessions. Are you talking about diabolical entities or just regular old spirits?
Just diabolical. I mean, regular spirits, demons 90% of the time influence. They are what I call whispers. You know, they influence somebody to do something, you know, typically something you wouldn't do. I don't mean on a moral level, but, you know, normally you wouldn't hit your neighbor with a baseball bat, but when it's whispering in your ear and the baseball bat's laying there, guess what happens? You know, then that person is in a sanitarium or in a prison cell dealing with that thing, haunting them at night. Everybody just think they're crazy, and you know, I always make the joke: 10% of the population in a sanitarium or in an asylum may not be crazy. Just you may not be able to see what they're seeing.
I believe that. I think we discussed that some on the show with Andrea Perrin, where there's a lot of people who maybe have a little more psychic ability than others, and that there's a possibility that there is a lot of misdiagnosis in mental illnesses where they're actually hearing dead people and they're not really crazy.
Correct. I mean, if I've experiences with those places, and the problem is the the 10, 20, 30% that's there that's actually possessed and tormented, when they pass on, that hitchhiker or entity stays. So this should be a very interesting when we go there, because there would be a lot of leftover evil entities just kind of hanging out waiting for someone to play with.
And what do you guys think about that, Mark and Brandon? You have an opinion on that? With what you
bring it
already...
on. That's why they call us extreme paranormal.
Oh, yeah, that extreme paranormal thing. I wanted to ask you about that. So you guys, like, go beat the crap out of the ghosts and take your clothes off and stuff like that? Because that sounds pretty extreme to me.
You know, honestly, it's nothing like that. I think the extreme part come from me, because I'm the type that wants to go by myself, leave me alone. And, you know, I started the whole extreme thing because nobody wants to go alone. Everybody wants to be scared. Everybody wants to be scared of the darkness. But you find a little closet there, and I will sit in it forever. I'm the type that likes to go extreme with it all. There's
no
reason to be scared of the unknown.
You know what, though? I bet you'd really get results in a sanitarium if you went and sat in that closet in a canoe.
You know what? I actually thought about the canoe. I did. But, you know, a raft seemed better.
Because, you know, then if crazy crap starts happening, then you'd be up the creek without a paddle.
Exactly. I didn't have a paddle at that time.
I want to ask Michael, who, by the way, is in the studio with me tonight. So if you guys are hearing some strange feedback, it's because we're both here together. Michael, tell the listeners what piqued your interest in demonology. How did you get started in all of this?
I've been involved with it since I can remember. My parents, especially my mother, and I guess I can go into some detail on the air because I'm using the name that I write under for my own protection. I've been fired from jobs because of this. My mother was the old school witch. I mean, she was not Wiccan. She would scare an exorcist. I mean, I've actually seen her lose her temper and have someone in her driveway eating gravel, grown men, because of stuff she did. Within 3 days, they would come to the driveway and eat gravel and beg her forgiveness, and they would take them away to the asylums. My earliest memories with stuff, she wasn't the most proficient witch. She was nice and evil, but not really that proficient. And she would call up stuff, her and the coven, more than they could handle. Stuff I can barely deal with now that I summon. 7 years old, I'd have stuff dragging me across the living room down the hall, and I'm screaming like crazy because I'm 7 years old. And Mom would say, well, we'll fix it. We'll fix it. You'll be fine. So the extreme version of this, because that's where I spent my childhood.
I'm sorry.
I couldn't hear you. I apologize. When I was 7 years old, the reason I have the experience with the asylum, Mom came up with this idea. One of my siblings was adopted out. She got rid of it. Personally, I think she probably sold him, but that's something can't be proven yet. My other one, she wound up in an institution because of brain damage, because of severe beatings. Mine came up with the idea that all the stuff that Mom was summoning and stuff in the house, that if I told the nice man in the white coat where she was taking me, that he would fix it for her. Well, what I didn't realize was she decided not to dock me out, or not to beat me to that point to where I was non-functional. She decided if she put me in there, she could possibly get a check, which is really awesome at 7 years old going into an asylum and actually seeing this stuff, and the more you tell people, the more often you get strapped down in that little room by itself. So because I could see these things, it was really, really bad in there because the people in there were so disturbed by them that they was everywhere. When the psychiatrist finally decided, you know what, he's not crazy, I was probably back home for about a month before they put me in a shelter. She just kind of disappeared. But I grew up in the shelter. I was, by the way, probably when I was 12, something like that. My first coven was a satanic coven. They had a real good understanding of what was going on in my life, and it just sort of blossomed from there. I'm not a Satanist. I just say demonologist. In my early youth, I used to summon these things and the things for my amusement, but now I just kind of control them and see what they want and kind of help people that's
oppressed by them?
Yeah. So.
And I wanted to tell you that, and I can't say the names because I have to protect the identity of the people involved, but within the last 3 weeks, Michael invited me to meet someone that he was trying to help. And let me tell you something. At first I was scared to death, and then I was mad as all get out because I had never seen anything like this before. I've seen a lot of stuff in my life. Anybody that's read my books, my haunted books, knows that I've seen a lot. But I have never seen anything like this. And he called this thing out of this young girl. She's like 20. She has some addiction issues and all kinds of problems in life. And he called this thing out of her, and I saw this in a mirror, and I saw it with my own two eyes, and I don't care how crazy everybody thinks I am, I saw this thing in the mirror. It was kind of like an overlay. Like if you put a transparent picture over a person so you can see the person, but you see this other thing over it. And it scared the crap out of me to start with, and then I was just mad because this girl, this poor young girl, was being afflicted by this thing that didn't want to let her go. And if you ever have the opportunity to witness something like this, for those that don't believe in God, take a good look at a demon and you will, because there can't be one without the other. And it was really enlightening and absolutely terrifying and at the same time enraging. He certainly knows what he's doing, and I'm still a little freaked out about it, and you can't tell. Go ahead.
I'd like to ask Michael a question, please.
Yes, sir.
What is the telltale signs of whether you got a demon or whether you have a spirit? What are the telltale signs that investigators like us need to look out for?
There's quite a few, and most of them can be misinterpreted, but the main ones is, when you're dealing with people at least, they change. They change your personality. It's really hard to articulate, but when you're dealing with spirits, it's anger. I always say demons don't necessarily have the power to possess everybody. If they did, more possessions would happen. Usually what they do is influence. But you'll feel different. You'll want to do things. You may get angry. I mean, you may have the urge to slap the guy next to you for no reason. Sometimes there's odors, coldness. I mean,
it's not necessarily, is it a manifestation? Because in the movies, and the movies mislead us a lot, I feel like they mislead us a lot on not just diabolical entities, but also ghosts. There's not necessarily a manifestation, is there, of like, you know, levitation or slamming stuff against the wall. That doesn't always happen, right?
No, that's
not the rule.
That happens 10% of the time.
Okay. So it's more of a chance. Go ahead,
but if we're taking, I'm sorry. I'm not using the two seconds.
That's all right. Say it again.
If we are taking EVPs, if we are doing an investigation, is there any signs that we can tell whether it's demonic, whether it's intelligent, whether it's residual? Is there anything that we can tell without further investigation whether it's demonic? I mean, we don't want to go into these locations and be mutilated, but we also want to know, you know.
Usually, if you're using EVPs, you'll get growling. Most of the sessions I do, I used to record, and you'd have growling on tape, a real raspy voice on the tape usually. They try to let you know that they're demons because they're proud of it. It's for their amusement because they can scare people, so they do it intentionally. I've walked in places before, but I'm sensitive to it, and demons are like, well, as you know, even ghosts, like they follow you home and stuff like that. Because you made contact with them or you've seen them, so they're like, hey, here I am, and they follow you. Demons are worse. Demons are like lovesick children. I mean, as soon as you notice them, they're on you, and you can feel the presence. I mean, usually you get bit or pinched or smacked. You're growling, odors, just an oppressive feeling.
I've always heard that demons will take on a child's persona. Is that correct?
Only if the person is sensitive to that. If somebody's really looking for a spirit or they're really fond of children, then they'll do that just to kind of get an imp. You know, just like on a Ouija board, they'll come in as a child to, so you don't see them coming, where they can get more power, then show themselves.
Do they ever... And this is just kind of an out there because I just now thought of it. Did he ever take on maybe the appearance of a loved one that's lost? You know, you hear, I don't give a whole lot of stock into psychics, just so everybody knows, because I think a lot of them read cold and they're just very intuitive and they can tell by body language and whatever what you're looking for. So there's not a whole lot of them that I believe in, but... I wonder if sometimes they don't take on the personification of someone that you know that has passed just to get foot in the door. Is that possible? Do they do that?
Yes, they do that a lot. I've seen it a lot. When someone loses a loved one, they'll start talking to them and stuff like that, and it may not be the spirit. It may be a demon. Use that as an opportunity. Again, I have a lot with Ouija boards, which I personally like. I wouldn't recommend anybody. I use them because I call these things up in mirrors and everything else for different purposes. But they do that a lot, yes.
See, I have a big thing, just so our listeners know, because I say this every show too, if you are not experienced in the realm of entities, do not use a Ouija board. If you don't know what you're doing, you are opening a can of worms that you cannot close, and it can be very, very dangerous. It looks really fun and very interesting, but on my part, I say steer clear. And I was a dummy. I did it in my earlier years, and it jacked my whole world up for a couple of years. And it might actually have been the opening that jacked my whole world up, period. I don't know this for certain, but... I say anything that's a divination as far as Ouija boards or even, what are those things called, guys? You know this, the divination rods? Is that what that is? Is that what that's called?
Yes.
No clue.
Anything that's going to work like...
tarot cards.
Yeah. Well, tarot cards is a whole different issue for me because...
Absolutely.
For tarot cards, not only can they invite things that you don't want, but there's always that whole thing called self-fulfilling prophecy, where you hear this is what's going to happen, so unconsciously, make it happen. So they say, okay, you're going to die in a car wreck, and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to die in a car wreck, and the next thing you know,
you're driving like an idiot because you think you're going to die anyhow, so what's the point? So things, anything that's divination, I think you have to take great care with because it's dangerous.
Michael?
I don't know what you're getting into.
Yes, sir.
I have a question for Michael. Michael, do demons ever take the form of a bean burrito? Because every time I eat a bean burrito, I smell foul odors.
I do the same thing. That sounds more natural than supernatural.
Oh, thank God.
I don't think
I was getting nervous.
Demon's favorite thing is take the appearance of a person that's alive. I've seen that a lot. I've been practicing ceremonial magicians for many years, chaos magician, Satanist. They love taking the appearance of a loved one. I've dealt with that a lot with people that would use Ouija board, and I'm a little different than Willie's point of view on that. I used to use them a lot. The thing about the Ouija board, and I'll jump back to the taking the appearance of a loved one, Ouija boards are anything to do with magic, and I've known some great ceremony magicians, very powerful Satanists and stuff, that didn't have the mental stability to deal with that. And I used to teach this, and you know, I would tell my new occult students and stuff, you know, you can summon anything you want to, you can bring the devil himself up. It ain't that big of a deal. The thing is, will you wind up in an institution before daylight? If you can't, if you're not prepared to be drug out of bed at 1 o'clock in the morning, to be in the middle of being intimate with your partner and have the whole bed slam up against the wall without it being your fault, you may not want to get involved in it to start with. And I've seen a lot of people, a lot of great witches, lose their minds because they couldn't control. That's what the demon messes with most of all, is your mind. More so than throwing stuff. I mean, that happens too. I mean, I've been false bit hit. I've had other people tossed around during ceremonies. But they like to mess with your mind. They like to whisper thoughts. And if you can't control your mind, that's what gets you in trouble. And one of the things about your loved ones, like if you're talking to someone, or anybody for that matter, like I could be talking to Willow right now, and then I turn away, reach to get a cigarette, and here she comes out of the opposite room of the studio. I haven't been talking to her for the last 10 minutes. I've actually seen that happen, and that's one of their favorite things.
Well, I have a question for you, Michael.
Yes, sir.
A lot of times when we go out to investigations, I don't mention family, I don't mention my son, but do you feel like regardless whether you mention this or not, do you feel like they know, you know, your family or know what you're close to or what your soft spots are? Because my biggest fear is honestly a child spirit, because to me, I feel like a child, you know, especially if they die young. A lot of, you know, they say a lot of demons disguise themselves as childs too, but I feel like they don't have a biggest grasp on the situation that they're in compared to, you know, someone that's lived a full life. But do you feel like they still could manifest with that without you even saying anything?
Yes, absolutely.
They know your family without you saying anything?
Yes, they know more about you than you can imagine because they're everywhere, basically, and it's like a network. It sounds funny when I say it like that, but it really is a network. I mean, when you were driving, say, to the store today or tonight or wherever you went to tonight, and you seen somebody on the side of the road, are you sure that you seen somebody walking, or is that how they present themselves to you? You know, they really are everywhere. It's just whether you have you ever been in a store and someone probably – they could be close to you, they could be 20 feet away, just didn't sit right with you, and they would give you a dirty look when you looked at them like you knew too much or something like that. Have you ever experienced that?
Oh, absolutely.
I had to happen today, as a matter of fact.
That's a demon.
At Taco Bell with the bean burrito?
No, man. No, I was sitting in the mall, right? I was eating actually for lunch today. I had a chicken Philly sandwich and fries. But as I was walking away from the line, this strange-looking guy was looking at me really weird. And I went over and sat at a table. I mean, I walked across the food court and sat at a table. And I didn't notice it, but this strange-looking guy followed me and sat in a booth. It was actually a bench with tables. And he sat about two tables over. And he said, and he was acting really creepy, and he said, "You having a good day?" I said, "Excuse me?"
Human.
Huh?
That was the demon. They make contact with you like that.
So then I didn't talk to him. I just ignored him. And after about maybe 5 minutes or so, he gets up and he walks over. And there was this like display in the walkway of the mall. And he pretends he's looking at brochures and stuff in this thing, but it was like nobody else could see him.
That's a demon. They're what I call watchers. They're everywhere. I mean, when you notice them, they usually make contact with you, like that one DJ, something like that. But you wouldn't believe just how many there are. I mean,
I believe
the one. It sounds like what you experienced.
You know, this is what you get in a call with a bunch of smokers on it.
Yeah.
It's getting funny. Somebody's
got a demon.
No, go ahead. Sorry, Brandon.
With that, along the lines of the same question, do you feel like maybe Earth is sort of purgatory, or if it's just spirits left behind altogether? Because I've often wondered, you know, we describe a purgatory as a place where souls are lost and are in waiting, but, you know, we still have a lot left on Earth. Do you feel maybe that we're the designated purgatory itself, or these are just strictly lost souls altogether, angry and lost?
I would say that, I mean, we're basically in purgatory. You know, my beliefs on that is weird because for many, many years, I didn't even believe in God. But, you know, I kind of started having to because when I got into ceremonial magic and stuff and working with angels, it wasn't hard for me to transition into believing there was God because I've seen the other sides. I mean, I've had them drag me out of bed when I was a child. I mean, my childhood was just a nightmare with these things. So, but I don't believe there's literal hell. You know, I believe they helped create it here by the whispering and stuff like that. I'll give you an example of how they can affect you. If I keep a lot of demons with me at all times. They're just kind of like stick to me because of my history. And I've got to find one that babysits me, you might say. They can influence people. I've been fired for a job for something that I did on the job, and I went to my boss, and I'm like, dude, I wasn't working at night. God's going to do the schedules. I'm like, you had me right here. We talked on the phone. Well, I know you did it. How? They told me. Who? I don't need to tell you. They told me. Who's they? I already know the answer. They told me. So, I mean, they can really influence people, and I think they can influence it to make it a hell here if you're not careful. Does that make sense?
So basically hell on Earth is kind of what we're almost describing in a way.
Yeah, it can be. I mean,
but basically what you're saying is when you come to the sanitarium, you're going to be bringing demons with you.
I'll probably bring a few to go play with the other ones, but I got dibs on the third floor by myself. I am just really excited to go up there and just have a cup of coffee and see how that works out for me.
Yeah, listen, you'll be by yourself because that's the worst floor. I'm hanging out with the dudes on a different floor.
The third floor has been by far our most active, I can say. I mean, that's where all of our action has just about taken place.
And I have.
Hey, you know what?
Yes.
I think when you go on this thing, I think y'all should wear Depends. There's going to be a lot of satin in the pants, if you know what I'm saying. You're going to make Shatner look like an amateur.
Be weird if sensations will come over you when you enter the sanitarium. I had, when the very first time I had went, I had not a tooth problem at all, you know, healthy teeth, everything. The moment I stepped into the building, all of a sudden one of my teeth started nagging me. And I mentioned it several times, you know, in the building that, you know, man, my tooth is killing me. We got an EVP on there that, you know, had told us to pull it. Every single time I stepped away from the building into my car, the tooth pain went away. Went in, pain, you know, came back. So if you think you might want to wear Depends, I mean, that might be a good measure for you to take because it does cause all kinds of sensations that aren't there before.
If you guys didn't mind, I actually wanted to go up on the third floor by myself and bring a mirror up there and see what I can summon up in the mirror. I mean, I can take a camera up there and stuff, but I'm really curious to see, you know, we take all the equipment up there, but I want to see what I can get stirred up on the third floor, because it should be interesting.
So, Michael, the mirror is a vanity thing, right? That's why the mirror is effective. That's how you can see them in the mirror, because they're looking at themselves.
No, they in a physical form, it's hard for them to transition into our world. And I'm... you can summon a demon up in physical form, and it takes multiple times, but eventually they'll come. You can actually create a demon lover and stuff like that. There's
a
strange, a demon lover. You can actually bring one up and, yeah.
Isn't there a danger involved? Because I've heard of this before. Isn't there a danger involved in this, though? And I'm not talking about you specifically because you know what you're doing, but say for the novice, there's a danger of summoning diabolical entities that will, if you can't control them, they're going to control you, correct?
Correct. I mean, summoning a demon up in physical form, the problem with that is usually it winds up possessing a person instead. So you get your demon lover, but they're possessed. Sometimes they manifest their body in extreme form. The problem is, though, can your mind handle it? All demons are fallen angels, so can you actually deal with one face-to-face and keep your sanity? So, and that's the whole thing. I bring them up in the mirrors because in a mirror they can't hit you, bite you, slap you, or choke you. So that's kind of, the mirror thing is the easiest to bring them up into and the safest.
Did y'all see, I'm a big fan of the show, everybody knows this, but all the listeners do anyhow. I'm a big fan of the show Paranormal Witness. Did you happen to see the show about the camera crew that went into that haunted house and one of the cameramen was actually hung by some rope in the attic by an invisible force? Did you guys see that?
Yes, I did, in the attic.
See, that's the crap that scares me. I don't get scared real easy. In fact, when I watch scary movies on TV or in the theater, 9 out of 10 times I'll be like, okay, that's lame. Because just like you said earlier, when you've dealt with it on a semi-regular basis, it becomes passe and you're like, okay, whatever. But that kind of stuff scares the absolute crap out of me.
It happens a lot.
Remember when Andrea was on the show, Willow, and she was talking about the stuff that, you know, because we were getting the inside story that wasn't The Conjuring, because she said that there were a lot of several things that were fabricated for the movie based on the true story. But she said that they had, when they did have a seance in the house, that her mother was picked up and thrown 20 feet across the room and slammed into a wall. She was watching when that happened, and it scared her to death. So, I mean, that was her story as far as the physical aspect of all of it. And then she said it was right after that that her father invited those people. What were those people's names, Willow?
Warrens, yeah.
And Lorraine.
The Warrens, yeah. He invited the Warrens to leave his house after that.
And not so nicely,
yeah.
According to Andrea. When she stuffed the one down, they didn't show in the movie. For me, that stuff is horrifying. And I really, the funny thing is every time we have a show, I'm like, oh, I steer clear from that. And we always end up talking about the stuff that I steer clear from. But it's, to me, that's horrifying because you don't have any control. I tell everyone when I get contacted, and I get contacted frequently, about how to get rid of things that are in your home, that you have to own your own space. You have to own it with every ounce of your being. You have to know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that is your home, it is your universe, and you run it. But when you walk into situations like what we're about to walk into in this sanitarium, you don't own jack. So you are
in your house.
You're wide open. The only thing you can own is the space around you, and if you don't own it with every ounce of your being, you could be in trouble. Correct, Michael? Is that
true? Oh, yeah. I mean, being mentally prepared because, you could go into three different investigations and very little happened. The fourth one, somebody get knocked 15, 20 feet across the floor. I mean, you never know who's going to show up and what exactly is going to happen. I mean, I've been in ceremonies before where we summoned up stuff and somebody would just get knocked across the floor, drug out of a circle, and, I mean, just stuff go wrong. I mean, it happens. It's not just something in movies. I mean, it actually can happen.
So I've got an actual question for both Willow and Michael. I did an investigation one time where a lady was actually restrained to her bed and felt like she, couldn't catch her breath. Could a spirit, normal spirit, do that, or does it have to be a demon?
You go ahead first.
In my opinion, and let me just say up front, although Michael is a very good friend of mine, our opinions in some things paranormal differ greatly. That doesn't mean that he's right and I'm wrong, or I'm right and he's wrong. It just means we have different outlooks on everything. A poltergeist is completely and totally capable of hurting you, not killing you, but hurting you. The problem lies in when there's death involved with poltergeists, which has happened, by the way. They can't document it fully, but I do believe it's happened, is that they can scare you to the point where you do stupid stuff, like you go running and you run out an upstairs window because you're scared out of your mind. They didn't push you out. You just ran out of it because you were scared. Are they dangerous? Yes, they can be. In my experience, which is very limited when you compare it to Michael's experience, in my experience, 9 out of 10 times when you have something that is physically hurting you, it's a diabolical entity. And I believe, and this is not something that is widely believed by other folks that are in the paranormal community, my belief is that spirits can only hurt you if they scare you enough that you do something stupid. That it's the diabolical entities that can actually create harm. When you see the scratches and the three claw marks, to me that is a direct indication that you are involved with the diabolical entity, and if you don't know what you're doing, you better get help, and you better get help now.
Okay, but I mean, if somebody is actually in the middle of a sleep, and they wake up, and they are being restrained to their bed, where they feel like they can't move their wrist, they feel like they're being choked, if that is the only thing that is happening besides little residual noises every now and then, I mean, could a poltergeist be absolute one minute, not good the next? I mean, could you live a normal lifestyle and
every now and then just feel them? Or would it be just maybe a disgruntled spirit that had an experience that could do that kind of physical damage?
How many questions was that?
According to Andrea Perrin, a poltergeist, an entity, can do that because she swears up and down that the entity that was attacking her mother was not demonic, it was a ghost. And
sure.
The demonic entity actually came through a seance that they held in the house, an unsanctioned seance that they held in the house. So she claims that that is an absolute possibility. She could be right. I don't know. I have not seen that yet, but just because I haven't seen it does not mean it hasn't happened. I just have not experienced that particular event. Anytime I've experienced something that someone was being injured, it was a diabolical entity. Can spirits hurt you? The common belief is no, they cannot. But I honestly, I just don't know the answer to that. Michael, what's your opinion on this subject?
For the most part, I agree with you. Me personally, spirits don't usually have that much energy to hold you down. I've seen it once or twice in 30 years. The rest of the time, it was demonic because holding you down is part of their amusement because it terrifies you. It's terrified me, you know, when I was into it to be held down. So if it's just a spirit, it's very, very rare that one can do that, in my opinion, from what I've seen.
Now, will a demon come and go? Now, will a demon say, hold you down at 1 minute and then be gone for months at a time and then come back and do it again, or will they be constant?
Everybody says constant. Every witch that I deal with in ceremonial magic and stuff says constant. My belief is different. I believe they come and go when they want to. If they're bored at the moment with you, they'll mess with you. If not, they go do other things and come back to you because they can always come back. So I believe, yes, a demon would come and go depending on the situation and the reasoning behind it. But usually it's a trigger. Something, an emotional event or an item or something like that, something triggers it.
So in other words, it could be a physical thing, like a material thing, or it could be emotion, something like that.
Could it be possible that it's like a milkman and it just comes around and makes a delivery once in a while?
Absolutely.
The milkman has in the closet for a while.
Willow, can I just ask a question? It's Marisha. Is this like are you talking about when people think they're dreaming this, when they're being choked?
Well, no. I think that what the guys are asking is about actual events when you're wide awake. And there is that whole situation.
Remember, because Andrea said that sometimes you might think you're awake and you're not. I think
can
she
you
said
say
something.
That again?
That Andrea said something of the fact that you might be asleep, but then maybe you're really up?
Right. Right. Well, there are some actual psychological conditions. One is called sleep paralysis, where you feel as if you're being choked, can't move, and you're wide awake, but your body can't move. And I can't remember the actual scientific definition of this, so please, if I tell you the wrong thing, don't crucify me.
Yeah.
But it's a situation where you're still kind of in REM sleep, and your body is paralyzed as if you're asleep, but you're actually wide awake, and it feels as if you're being held down. Sometimes it can feel as if you're being choked, and that's not paranormal. There is an actual medical condition called sleep paralysis that can cause these things. However, I can promise you with every ounce of my being that if you're getting grabbed and dragged out of your bed, that there's no psychological condition that covers.
No, that's different. That's different because that's what Andrea said. That's what happened to her mother.
Right.
That's not a spirit.
See, it's really hard to say because when it's a movie, it really is difficult because she has three volumes of her experiences. But then the movie was about their family. In one of them,
right.
So when she wrote it, it was weird because, because it's very different than sometimes people think because she said, I mean, they all liked the movie and they felt it was almost truthful, I mean, on the aspects. Remember she said that?
Well, one of the things she said about the movie, which was I found amazing, was this. Forgive me if I don't have the correct number. I could be wrong in how many times, but I believe that what she said was 8 times they had sent it to Warner Brothers for approval, and there were 8 times that they sent it back and said, you've got to dumb it down. This is too much. People aren't going to buy this. And as scary as that movie was, it was 8 times scarier, because they dumbed it down to the point where it wasn't even factual anymore. It was fiction, because what really happened was so freaking terrifying that they didn't feel like people would
Maybe we should put the links out. We should put the links out on your website or something of my show with her and your show with her, because she actually read some of the things on my show. And, it's really hard to imagine all that happened, but it did. I mean, I don't know. Those people were really into Andrea. So I think it would be interesting for people to see the links because of the shows that she was on.
Andrea
was on.
So Andrea is the writer of the
I'm actually talking to Andrea right now on Facebook. So
okay.
I'm double checking to make sure that I'm getting my facts straight so I'm not lying to anybody.
Now, Andrea the writer of The Conjuring? Is that what you're saying?
She. It's her family that they were talking
absolutely.
About.
Okay.
She's very interesting.
Here.
Absolutely.
She says, tell me, if you guys want to know something about that, she says, tell me and I'll give you my opinion. She's going to answer live right now through Facebook.
She ought to call in.
Yeah, she needs to call in.
Yeah, she could call in. Give her ask her if she wants to call in. She's tired. She's really been doing so much with the tours for the book and the movie.
I would love to hear her opinions on all this.
They lived in the house. They lived in the house for 10 years, I think, like this. 10 years,
yeah,
Will?
10 years.
10 years.
Yeah.
No, all of this happened for 10 years in the house, and they didn't leave the house.
Well, what are you asking her?
I'm asking her right now if she wants to call in.
Brandon, you wanted to ask me the question originally, correct?
Willow did?
Brandon, was Brandon asking the question originally?
Wait, what was the question again? I'm sorry.
About whether that was a spirit or a demon? Was it you that asked me?
That was Mark there. He asked
Mark.
You. Yes, sir.
Now, a lot
I'm
of times stuff happens.
The question?
Not whether that was a spirit or demon holding the person down.
Yes, sir. I was asking you, I understand the concept of, and she does too. I understand the concept of sleep paralysis. But when you have the physical aspiration of somebody holding your wrist and holding your legs and holding your throat, but comes and goes, I mean, could that possibly be a demon or a spirit that has maybe experienced that same aspect? Coming and going. I mean, it don't happen all the time. But could it be something,
But it could be a spirit, but more likely it's a demon. And it's broader. I mean, you don't know what your family done 100 years ago. In my case, I mean, when I was 7 years old, the thing jumped up, knocked me up against the wall, busted the
not the sheetrock, but the hanging on the wall and said, you're mine, you're property of me, present gift from your mother. I mean, in her coven, she sold my soul or attempted to.
Wait, maybe, is that Andrea, you think, on the phone? Willow, did she say she's calling in?
Calling in.
Okay.
Calling in.
Okay.
Okay, wait, I'm opening, I'm putting her in. Andrea?
Hi.
Oh, hi, it's Marcia and Willow, and we have a whole bunch of guys on the phone. And all right,
Andrea.
Here's Andrea Perone to talk to. You can ask Andrea herself.
Introduce everybody, Willow.
Hi. Hi, this is Andrea. How you guys doing?
We're good.
We are doing great.
Oh, I'm
doing
so
great.
Glad. I just went in to sign off, you know, sweet dreams to my friends on Facebook, and Willow's message popped up. I'm like, oh,
right,
this looks interesting. Oh, it's so nice to talk with you all. Do you have any questions for me? Anything that I could help you with? I'll certainly try.
I do. I never went to the theaters and watched The Conjuring. I just got The Conjuring on Redbox, and I haven't watched it yet. But
you're in for a surprise.
In your experiences, have you ever ran across anybody? You know, I mean, do things just come and go? I mean, is a poltergeist supposed to just stick around? Do they always stick around? I've always seen shows where they pretty much, you know, you see the little captions and it's like 6 months later, and then something happens. Do spirits come and go? Is there a situation where that happens?
Well, I don't pretend to be the world's leading authority on this, and what I tell people all the time is that if we, speaking of my family, if we don't know, I don't think anyone does. I think there are some things that are supposed to be a mystery. Speaking for myself personally, I can answer that question steadfastly in one way. And I think that it only appears as if the spirits come and go. I think they're with us all the time, that we live in a multidimensional universe on multiple levels of action that are occurring simultaneously. I think there is some crossover, but I don't believe in the veil. I think that that's an illusion, that spirits are real and the veil is the illusion. I think it's a defense mechanism that we build up or that is built and programmed into us from childhood as adults tell us that we've just had a dream or we don't have an imaginary friend or, you know, there are no spirits or, you know, whatever kids get told that make them stop seeing what kids naturally see, which is everything. They look at the world with wide-eyed wonder and they see things and animals see things that well-programmed adults do not. I think that we are all completely surrounded by spirit all the time, and that we are watched over lovingly, that most spirits that interact with the material world do so with purpose and reason, that most of those reasons are not in any way negative. It's more of a resolution thing, I suspect. But I don't think that they just come and go. No, I don't. And I think that because we're relegated to what we perceive to be a three-dimensional world, we have certain expectations of it, and when we dash those expectations and we start to think in terms of living in a multidimensional world, when we open our minds and pry open our third eye and are touched by spirit or have any kind of an encounter, that it changes the way that we think about everything forever. It's like going from black and white to technicolor in terms of the human experience. I think we are all completely surrounded, and we should come out with our hands up.
I agree.
That is
I completely agree.
It's time to just let go and let God and let the world change and become spiritually awakened to the truth of our reality and our existence.
I agree.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to leave anybody speechless, but I really do feel, you know, like I feel like I've got a handle on this one. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you lived in the house for 10 years, right? Like this? With
yes.
10 years, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, 10 years, almost exactly 10 years.
Can
you
I
know,
ask
when
you a
I'm
question,
about...
Andrea?
And
by the way, I want to tell the listeners, our next show is December 6th, and Andrea and her friend Julie are going to be on the show. It's going to be a pre-recorded show because of the holidays and stuff, so it won't be live. But I'd like to go ahead and ask you a question now, if you don't mind, since you're right here.
I am right here.
You may not consider yourself an expert, but I consider you an expert because
yes.
10 years of
I would think
past.
You are. Yes, she is.
Well, you're all delusional. I know nothing.
my question is this. The guys asked earlier about this, and I have my own opinion, but I'd like to hear your opinion of this. A poltergeist, do you believe a poltergeist can inflict bodily harm? Because when we talked on the last show, you stated, if I'm remembering correctly, and if I'm wrong, please correct me, that the entity that was attacking your mother and leaving all those bruises on her and stuff, that was just a ghost, right? That was not a diabolical entity.
I think that the night of the seance, you know, in the film it's portrayed as an exorcism, which did not happen. But what actually did happen was so intense that I don't know if it could even be recreated on film. But I will tell you that my mother my mother was attacked by something that I perceived to be pure evil. I don't call it a demon. I don't call it a poltergeist. I don't call it anything. I don't know what all of the technical terms are for describing a certain entity. All I can do is describe its behavior. And what that was, I think, my perception of it was pure evil that had complete control over the entire environment and the situation, that was unchallengeable, that had the power to take my mother's life if it chose to, and it didn't. It spared her but made its presence known to every single witness.
Yeah.
My mother
is
the one I perceive to be the survivor of our family. My mother is the one whose life was threatened, and I thank God every day that she does not remember that night.
She doesn't remember anything?
Nothing of it, none.
Well, according to the way they did it in the movie, it's kind of like she was so protective of her children.
You should disregard anything that you saw in the movie in terms of emotional attachments between our mother and us. My mother would not in a bajillion years do anything to hurt or inflict intentional harm on her children, no matter what was trying to persuade her.
I didn't get that from the film. I thought she was protecting her children. I felt
No. They
really?
Were being
maybe
brought back to the house
maybe...
to be murdered.
Really?
Yeah. At the end, it did seem as if she had taken. It was your two youngest sisters, right?
Yeah.
In the film, she took April and Christine, number 3 and number 5. Yeah, which I guess were chosen arbitrarily. I don't know, but if you'll recall, when she had the kids in the cellar, she had a pair of scissors in her hand and was lunging at my sister with them.
That probably wasn't her doing it, really. You think? I mean,
well, the implication was that she had at that point been possessed by a spirit named Bathsheba, and that Bathsheba was a practicing witch. That she killed her own child in 1863.
Yeah, right. That's true. Right.
But in 1863, Bathsheba Sherman was already an old woman. She was beyond childbearing years, well beyond.
Yeah.
She had four children in life. Three of them were dead by the age of four.
Wow.
No, she suffered a lot in life. I'm her great defender. In fact, a big chunk of Volume 3 is about Bathsheba and how words are weapons and words declare wars. And when you say something against someone, you should absolutely know what you're saying or not say it at all, because the reputation that she had in life followed her into her death. And I believe that that's what keeps her an earthbound spirit.
Wow.
But there were many false accusations, and she's not even the least bit happy that her gravesite has been desecrated, and she's very unhappy that a man played her in the film.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Because you lived with all of those entities for such an extended period of time, now that you're no longer in residence at the farm, are they still with you?
My sister Cindy said they're trapped there and that they cannot leave. But that's not my sense of things. So there's dispute even within the family. Cindy said that the reason she believes that is because when she and Nancy went back to the farm in 1996, they were put in the bubble. They were spoken to telepathically. They were touched. Their hair and their faces were touched. And the spirit said to them simultaneously, "Oh, my God, it's you. You're back." And so Cindy said, not only is that proof that the spirit believes in God, and so therefore Cindy said that's reason enough to believe in God because they would know. But she also said that the spirit loved us so much, this particular one, the one that smelled of flowers and fruit and would come around at night and lean over to kiss us, you know, just put us, tuck us into bed late at night. She was the one. And they both said, Nancy and Cindy both said, that she was holding a malignant entity at bay, that she was the one that was protecting them. And Cindy said that if she could have come with us when we left in 1980, she most certainly would have. And so because she didn't, she felt that they were trapped there. So that was her rationale and her argument. And who knows? I mean, we don't know. That's the great mystery. Who knows? All I know is that I am frequently spoken to, and it's not because I'm nuts. I'm probably the sanest person that any of you will ever meet. And that's the thing that's so extraordinary about it is, to me, every time it happens, it's a miracle. And in my acknowledgments at the end of Volume 3 is a very nice passage acknowledging the spirits and the part they played with getting the story done, because there were many nights that it was 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. My mother was sound asleep, and so was my sister Christine. And even the dogs were out like a light, and something would push me back up to the keyboard when I would push away and say, "I can't do this."
So do you think they picked you?
Several
you think
times.
They picked you for the one to tell the story?
Yes. Yeah, I knew from a very early age. I've known all my life that someday I would tell the story. I just didn't know when. And then in August of 2007, the bell went off in my head, and my completely happy, satisfied life no longer brought me any contentment, and I suddenly had a sense of urgency that I've never felt before, and I began writing.
Are you content now?
No, and I won't be until Volume 3 is done. I'm about 2 months behind on my own personally imposed deadline because I have traveled extensively, and I'm exhausted beyond words. The word exhaustion doesn't touch
That's what I thought, because I know you're traveling so much. She's probably exhausted, you know. And it takes a lot out of you, I'm sure, to do this.
Well, and the thing is that, you know, I want this book to be perfect. I want this book to be the best of the three. I want it to be the one that catapults the trilogy into the upper echelon of paranormal literature. And it will be, and I will finish it, and I'm so close to done now, I can taste it. So I keep pushing myself. I'll be up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning again and then get back up at 7 and start again because that's what I do. My mother says I have lived on coffee and catnaps for 5 years.
Yeah, she's right.
I can't even dispute her claim.
Mark and Brandon, are you still here?
We are very much still here.
See, look at you. We're all three. Like, look how the show always turns out. Can I tell?
Well, I don't mean to.
Once you finish.
Go ahead.
Once you finish the third chapter, do you feel like you'll be satisfied then, or do you feel like there's more?
Oh, there's a lot more. There's a lot of things that were left out of the books. But some of them were with purpose and reason because they were just too difficult or they were too personal. And the five of us, the sisters, all decided together that we would withhold anything that was uncomfortable for us. But I would say that about 90% or more is out, so of the significant manifestations. And I try through the course of the books to let the reader know, you know, Cindy might see this one particular spirit in this one chapter, but it happened hundreds of times. So, you know, it's the kind of thing where, you know, you can beat that horse to death and become redundant, or you can just in a single line say, this happened hundreds of times.
Well, I'm about to watch The Conjuring for the first time ever, and I will tell you this, I sincerely appreciate this sequel. I appreciate being here and being able to hear this, you know, before I watch it. That is probably the best gift I can have right now.
Oh, that's so great. Well, don't take it too seriously. First of all, being a paranormal investigator, you're not going to be all that shocked or surprised by anything that you see in it. But I do think that the film is extremely well done. It's masterfully made. The filming of it, the direction of it, you know, James Wan treated this material with great respect. This is difficult material, and he treated it with great respect. He was very kind and generous with the children. We were worried about them being traumatized. And Lily Taylor turns in an incredible performance.
Oh, I think they
so
should. I think I hope she gets
her.
A nomination. I think she.
I
do
think too.
She was unbelievable in it.
Andrea,
yes,
unbelievable.
I want to make sure that I relayed the facts correctly earlier. Was it 8 times you told me, 8 times Warner Brothers sent the movie back and said, "This you can't do this, it's too scary, dumb it down"?
Well, they didn't say dumb it down, not by a long shot. They tried to keep the script thoughtful and intelligent, and I think that they succeeded in every respect in terms of doing that. And there are some things that make sense, that what they did. For instance, they have my mother going and seeking out the Warrens. Well, that was their opportunity to show them in a seminar situation. This film was, the screenplay was based on the case files of Ed and Lorraine Warren on the investigation that they conducted at our house over a period of about a year and a half, from 1973 into 74. And it was really meant to be kind of a testament to them, to their career, to what they've accomplished in terms of paranormal exploration and studying the supernatural. But it also, like for instance, they've got them as the devout Catholics and the Perrin family as godless heathens. And nothing could be further from the truth. We were all born and raised Catholic. We were all baptized into the church. And the Catholic Church and our priest in our parish is the one who turned his back on us. It wasn't the other way around. We didn't leave the church. The church left us. And my mother had no idea who the Warrens were when they showed up at our door. But to Mrs. Warren's credit, I will say that the first thing she did was walk into the kitchen, put her hand on the black stove and cover her forehead and say, "I sense a malignant presence in this house. Her name is Bathsheba." There's no way she could have known about Bathsheba.
Yeah.
No way she could have known. In the same way that my mother could not have known when she named our puppy Bathsheba.
Wow.
So what force is powerful enough to intervene in destiny, to create fate? I have to ask myself, were we called, were we summoned to that house? Were we charged with this? Were we supposed to see everything that we saw and taste what we felt and smelled in the air and have been imposed upon in sometimes dangerous ways to know without any question that there is something beyond our mortal existence and that some spirits are mean-spirited in the extreme, that evil exists. I don't call it demons. I don't call it poltergeists. I don't use the words incubus or succubus. I think that we have a tendency to need to define everything. I cannot define what attacked my mother the night of the seance. It didn't happen in the cellar. It happened in the dining room. There was a priest there. He was white as a sheet and shaking in the corner of the dining room. Whatever it was that came into my mother that night wanted everyone, the Warrens, the medium, the priest, us, everyone that was witness to this event, to see it, to know that it exists, and to call it out. It had the power to kill my mother. It didn't. It chose not to. It was so evil that it subdued the spirits in the house for months afterwards. The house was eerily quiet for months. Nothing. No activity at all.
Was your mother bruised like that? Was your mother bruised? You know how your mother and this in
my mother had bruises. My mother lost an inexplicable amount of weight. I'm so glad they didn't do that to Lily Taylor. I'm so glad they didn't have her waste away over the course of the filming because it was hard to watch my mother that happen to my mother.
Wow.
Do you have any opinion as to why this entity did what it did? Do you think it was all about her wanting to just be the mom? Or, I mean, do you have an opinion as to what the reasoning was of this thing?
I don't think what attacked my mother that night, and I, you know, there is some debate, and it's legitimate debate, about whether or not she was possessed for a short amount of time. Because whatever it was came into her body, took control of her body, took control of her physical presence, the vessel, Carolyn. And Carolyn, for that period of time, ceased to exist. And I saw that happen with my own eyes. I saw my mother speaking in a language, heard her speak in a language that does not exist on this planet. I heard and saw her in absolute agony and writhing in pain and growling like a wild animal. I mean, it was horrific. It was horrific, worse than anything that they could portray in the film. And she was levitated feet into the air and then within literally a split second was tossed from the dining room into our parlor 20 feet away. In a split second, in a fraction of a second.
Wow.
Andrea, there was, I believe it was you that we were speaking to, that one of the reasons why you believe that we live in a multi-plane environment is that when you saw other people in the house. Was that you that had said that?
That I had seen other people,
like from a different time period in the house?
Oh, yes, numerous times, yes. I'll finish, let me finish answering the question that I kind of got away from just a moment ago, and then I'll go back to that. But I was told through a producer of the film that the script was sent back 7 times because of and I don't know if that's an accurate number or not, but I was told that the script was sent back because it was too close to the truth, and at the upper echelon of people at Warner Brothers felt that in this particular instance, the truth was stranger than fiction. And they wanted to get a PG-13 rating, and they wanted to, I think the most important thing to them was that they wanted to tell the story as truthfully and as honestly as they could without actually drawing direct themes from the books. And I think that there was purpose and reason behind that, and time will tell in terms of that. But they took the information from Mrs. Warren, which was substantial, and they took the information from me, which was substantial as well. And it was really more than they could ever work with to condense into a two-hour film. So what they did was the Chad and Carrie Hayes, the twin brothers who wrote the screenplay, had to draw and you know, pull a thread here and a thread there, and with that they decided to weave their own third story. That's what worked best for the studio, and that's what worked best in terms of incorporating as much of the story as possible in the shortest amount of time. And in that respect, I thought they did a great job. And,
yeah, it has to be suitable for PG-13, because once you make it an R, you restrict a lot of people from seeing it then. And
well, it ended up being an R anyway.
Yeah, I know. That's what it, but it's on cable. It went on cable and Netflix very fast, I think, so that was a good thing.
Well, actually, it opened on July 15th, so it was in the theaters for months.
Right.
It was in the theater longer than most feature films ever make it.
Yeah.
So in that respect, it did extraordinarily well. It's one of the top grossing films of its genre of all time.
Yeah. I thought it would be hard to make that, so it was an R. Okay, because I don't see how you can do so. You have to have eyes on these things.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they said it was too intense. The MPAA, when they gave it its rating, they said, Warner Brothers wanted an explanation, and James wanted to know what he would have to take out of the film to get a PG-13.
Yeah.
And they said, there's nothing you can take out of it. It's just too scary.
Yeah. Well, I think it's certainly scary, and certainly in a dark show, in a dark theater, is much more than if you're watching it at home. If you're in a theater, it was... Because I saw it on cable, but then I also was in another show and I went in to kind of see it, and people were just, you know, because I went next door for a few seconds to see it. It was scary in the black, dark theater, really scary.
Well, as a retrospective of the Warrens' career, I think it's great, and I think that there will be other films about the Warrens, and I know that Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga have agreed that they would like to go forward and create a series of films about investigations conducted by the Warrens. That's a great idea. So I think there will be sequels to The Conjuring, but I also feel absolutely certain that there will be a feature film, if not a miniseries, based solely on the books.
I hope so, because here's the thing. I grabbed your first book off of Amazon, and listen, I got to tell you, Andrew, you and I know each other now a little bit.
I do.
And you know that it's really hard to creep me out. I've been through enough stuff that it's a difficult thing to creep me out, and I'm 3/4 of the way through the first book, and I'm telling you, I'm creeped out, girl.
Well, you're going to have to strap on your brave cap. Yes, go ahead, honey.
You got spirit guides. What is our destination? As far as your spirit guides, what do they think that we would expect from this experience from the sanatorium?
Well, I'll tell you what, honey, if I had the answer to that, I think that I would be considered queen of the world. That's the question that everyone wants answered. That's the question that we all wonder about in the wee hours when we're alone in the dark. What is there? What is our destination? Where are we going? My personal opinion is that we're probably a recycled soul, that we come back time and again, and that we have lessons to learn, and we need to learn how to love properly and how to cherish our planet and take care of each other and be good human beings. Good.
Say there's going to be an epic event. We got a demonologist. We got investigators. We have a film crew coming to this sanatorium. What would you think would be the best advice you could give as far as our best approach to these individuals that has suffered, but then again has been tormented?
I think that the only thing to do, that the only approach to take is one of kindness and supreme respect. You cannot even imagine what some of those people lived through before they died. Mm-hmm. And what you have to do is treat them with great kindness and true compassion. You know, just dig as deep as you must to feel. And that opens you up to so much. Because if you do that, you're going to feel their pain. And that will be very difficult for you. You will feel pain there. I promise you will.
But that's what they need, right? Mm. That's what they need. Am I wrong in my expectations? Is that the whole point of hauntings is to connect and say, this is what happened. This is how bad it was. Comprehend me and feel this. Am I wrong there?
Well, I think that probably is part of it. I think more than anything, they simply want to be acknowledged. If they show themselves in any way, if they try to connect in any way, then they want to be acknowledged first and foremost. And, you know, the thing is that I don't understand exactly how it works. You know, I don't even know if I want to. All I know is that there will probably be encounters there that will be gut-wrenching, and I just want everybody to try to protect themselves to the best of their ability and to make sure that they've got someone who is, if not a holy person, someone who is pure of heart that goes with your group, because it's really important for them to be able to, you know. I was just in a hospital in Texas, Yorktown Hospital, owned by my friend Phil, and he took me all through this place. I'll tell you, I left there so tired, and it wasn't that I felt anything particular. I haven't even reviewed the film footage. I haven't even looked at the photographs that I took. All I know is that I felt just absolutely depleted when I left that building, and I was perky and wide awake when I went in. So you just don't know what exactly is going on, whether you're being deliberately drained of energy so that there can be a possible manifestation on some level, or if it's just your own anticipation that literally wears your ass out while you're in this particular place. But I do know that, for, you know, sanatoriums and places of that nature have a very dark, like a shroud of sadness over them, and it'll suck you dry if you're not careful.
I wish you could go with us, Andrea.
No, I don't. Thank you so much. I'm busy. Yeah. No matter when I'm busy.
I am absolutely terrified to go. In fact, I called Michael, and I said, look, Extreme Arkansas Paranormal has invited me to go on an investigation with them. And he's like, oh, that's really cool. And I'm like, I want you to go with me. And he's like, why? And I'm like, it's to a sanitarium. And he's like, oh, yeah, maybe I should go. And I'm like, I can't go without you, because I'm telling you, these things follow me everywhere I go, and if you don't come with me, they're going to be coming with me, and I can't be doing that here. I got babies here. Michael is my protection.
Yeah, I feel better now knowing that you have the nurse there for bait, because Laura and I have already discussed, if something happens, she's tripping me as she's going out the door.
That's right.
So it's like a bait now.
It's like a zombie run. Those who find die.
Well, with that, it sounds like it's a good time to wrap things up. We're running out of time. So I'd like to give everybody a chance before we go off the air to give their websites and book and everything like that. So go ahead, Willow, lead that for me.
Andrea?
Yes, dear.
All you have to do for Andrea is Google her. She's everywhere.
Yeah.
When I say everywhere, I mean everywhere there is to be, you can find Andrea Parent. Correct?
that's sort of happened.
And Brandon and Michael, website, Facebook, give us your contact info.
Margo, I think you can do it there.
What's that?
Mark, are you there?
I think he's gone.
Okay. Well,
No, he's still on. No, they're all okay. Everybody's on, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's off here, but we're Extreme Arkansas Paranormal. Not too sure what the... It should be... Just look us up on Facebook, Extreme Arkansas Paranormal.
I think I put it on in the link. I think there's a link of it. I think there might be
on
the blog post.
Yes, I do. Yeah, I saw one there.
If you can't see the chat room and you are listening to this archived, it's https://www.facebook.com/Extreme Arkansas Paranormal. Make sure you check them out, because these guys are...
I'm going to pull it off and I'm going to... I think I put it on when I put the show on, Willow. I think it's on.
Yeah, you did. Yeah,
okay. All right. I'll put that up again.
These
okay.
guys know their stuff, and you need to check it
Wait,
out.
Wait, there's somebody. Well, is there one more person? I don't know. Somebody came in, but the show's going to go off, so I don't know. Somebody else is here too. Did we lose somebody? I don't know.
I'm still here.
We have
here.
Michael Barbie. We are in the process of creating Michael's Facebook page. You need to check him out. He's got a new book coming out called Sex Magic. It's from his Book of Shadows, and for everyone, male or female, this should be very interesting. I'm Willow Cross. You can find me on www.willowcrossbooks.weebly.com, or you can find me on Facebook at Willow Cross Books. J.H., give him your contact info, please.
You can Google me as well, J.H. Glaze. I'm everywhere as well. So I'm also on Facebook, J.H. Glaze on Facebook. But I prefer you friend me at author J.H. Glaze rather than go to my page, because I can get in touch with you if you friend me.
Yes, and I prefer you to friend me too, by the way.
Okay, and and you know what? We're going to have another show, right? You said? Okay, it's Marcia.
December 6th, we are going to have a pre-recorded show with Andrea and her friend Julia, who does photography with ghosts. And it's amazing. Listen, if you didn't listen to the last show with Andrea, you got to check out the new show that we're going to do, because what Julia can do with the camera is just absolutely out of this world. And keep an eye out for YouTube. On YouTube, you're going to look for Potato King Productions. It's going to be the documentary about our ghost investigation at the South Arkansas Janitorium. And thank you so much for joining us on the Paranormal Hour tonight. And thank you
from
the World of Being Network.
Good night to everybody. Good night. All right. It turned out.
Good night. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Good night. Bye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.